I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Grant and Danny welcoming you back on 106.7 The Fan. As we've been telling you throughout the day, we've got tickets to LIV Golf. Let's give those away right now to caller number 10. Congratulations. 800-636-1067. You are winning tickets and ground passes to go to the LIV Golf Tourney, May 26th to the 28th this week, Trump National Golf Club. See the top players, including Dustin Johnson, Phil Mickelson, Cam Smith, Brooks Koepka coming off the PGA Tour win. PGA Championship victor will be on site. This is high-stakes golf, whole new vibe and energy. Tickets are selling fast. For tickets and more event information, go to thefandc.com/contests. Right now, let's get to the BetQL guest hotline. Bet smarter to beat the books. Download the BetQL app. Visit BetQL.com and talk to Daniel Wallach, gaming law and sports betting attorney, the co-host of Conduct Detrimental, sports law professor and analyst, who is joining us because he's been working hard on the Brian Davis lawsuit, and he's just got some wacky anecdotes he's unearthed about some of the specifics of this lawsuit. Daniel, thank you for the time. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show today to talk about the topic that seemingly will last for another couple of years at the rate it's going.
Yeah, it seems like it. It's entertaining for people in D.C., but we're trying to figure out how much legitimacy, credibility there is to this. So I guess let's just start with what you found. You've been digging in on this Brian Davis lawsuit against Bank of America. Get us up to speed on what's going on.
Yeah, the most important thing is besides filing a lawsuit on Friday, yesterday, Brian Davis's company. Brian Davis is not the party in this lawsuit. His company, Urban Echo Energy, is the named plaintiff. And on Monday, that company filed an emergency motion for a temporary restraining order because what this lawsuit is about is to have a $5.1 billion bank draft that Brian Davis attempted to place on deposit with his corporate account at Bank of America. Bank of America reviewed the draft and rejected it and ended up terminating Urban Echo's account. So it wasn't just simply declined. They closed Urban Echo's account. So it raises issues as to the source of the funding. And when you peer behind the sort of the papers that were filed, and you look at the signature line on this $5 billion. There were two bank drafts, one for $5 billion and another for $100 million. The signature on that bank draft is not somebody that's familiar to anyone. It is an estate that belonged to a person by the name of Severino Garcia Santa Romana. And the bank draft is signed by his administratrix. So presumably Mr. Santa Romana died a number of years ago and his estate is worth billions. But when you do the research to find out who Santa Romana is, it is an absolutely insane story. It traces all the way back to, reportedly gold that was, gold bullion and gold, bricks that were looted by the Japanese during World War II and stored in caves and tunnels in the Philippines. This is like right out of Kelly's Heroes, if anyone in your audience is old enough to remember the Clint Eastwood film. And this Santa Romana character was a Philippine-American commando who was also a CIA operative. He stole some of the gold, and supposedly it was worth billions. deposited the gold and cash at Citibank. And this is the source of the money that's supposedly behind Brian Davis's bid to purchase the Commanders. It is just out of left field. And obviously, when Bank of America reviews this bank draft from the estate of Santa Romana, you know, red bells and red lights go off, because banks have to be very concerned about foreign sources of money, money laundering, bank fraud. They're looking at this issue so super closely, especially given the amount at issue, which is several billion dollars. And they declined it. And going beyond that, they closed his accounts. So the lawsuit is about Brian Davis's desire to get that money credited back to his account so that he could present a bid to Dan Snyder to buy the Commanders for $7.1 billion, which, if this lines up and is a legitimate bid, it's a dream bid for Snyder, because it's a billion higher than the Harris Group. It would be the first black majority owner in NFL history. He would get full indemnification for all of his, toxic workplace environment claims that could be asserted against him. There are no limited partners, and it would be an all-cash deal. What's there not to like? But the problem is, from day one and remains today, the questionable source of where this money comes from.
When you say they closed the account, is that to say that there is still money in that account that he can't get back? Is that what he's alleging, the $5 billion? And then I guess a two-parter, why did they close the account? Is it just what you're talking about, their skepticism about where the money came from? And how does he even get linked up with this person and the weird past that you just referenced?
Yeah, it is a weird past, and I feel almost embarrassed to talk about this on the air, because it is not based on any evidence that has been submitted in the case. It's just my own curiosity as to who this person could possibly be. And when you compare the name of Severino Garcia Santa Romana, who had accounts at Citibank, and there was an administrator by the name of Rodriguez who signed the bank draft, every search reference traces it back to this historical event called Yamashita's Gold. It's like a Harrison Ford Indiana Jones movie. So what happened with the closing of the account is, we've only heard one version of the events. This is Brian Davis filed the initial complaint. It's a bare bones complaint. It's only 8 pages long, so he doesn't provide all the necessary details. To find out the full story, we're gonna have to wait for Bank of America to respond to the lawsuit, and also to respond to the emergency motion for a preliminary injunction, temporary restraining order. They're probably going to enter an appearance in the case very soon and file something, this week or next week. But all that Brian Davis alleges in his complaint is that on March 9th, he tried to deposit the bank drafts with Bank of America totaling $5.1 billion. The drafts were conforming to Bank of America's procedures, and Bank of America accepted the drafts. And then 6 days later, plaintiff Urban Echo was notified on March 15th, 6 days later, that Bank of America was terminating its accounts and refusing to credit the $5.1 billion to Urban Echo's account. And in a footnote in the lawsuit, it says that the account balance is zero. So I don't know if he opened this account just for the purpose of depositing these funds, or there was always a zero balance at Bank of America through Brian Davis's corporate account. There's so much of the story that we haven't discovered yet because of the brevity of the complaint that he filed. Certainly when Bank of America weighs in, they're going to fill in a lot of the missing pieces to the story. But what Davis is seeking is a court order requiring Bank of America to immediately credit his company's bank accounts with the full $5.1 billion so that he can present an offer to purchase the Commanders to Dan Snyder. And he's of the belief that Snyder would have accepted Urban Echo's offer had they been aware of the $5.1 billion that was being held in limbo by Bank of America. The problem here, besides the craziness of this story and questions as to its validity, I think the ship has already sailed for Brian, because Dan Snyder has entered into what seems like a binding agreement with the group fronted by Josh Harris, and that agreement has been presented for consideration by the NFL ownership. So I don't know how Brian Davis can assert or prove that he was irreparably harmed. That is a very important element, because in order to secure emergency injunctive relief from a federal court or a state court, which is essentially getting a victory at the beginning, not only do you have to prove you're likely to succeed on the merits of the lawsuit, but you need to demonstrate at the hearing that you're irreparably harmed at this moment without emergency injunctive relief. And I don't know that he can prove that element, because Snyder has already executed a deal with the Harris Group, and he is under no obligation to consider any other offer. He's a private businessman who can pick the second highest offer, the highest offer, the fourth highest offer. It's up to him, and he's already made his choice. So I'm not sure what benefit or what good would be accomplished by Davis securing a TRO, and I think a federal court is going to shut it down because of the finality of the written agreement between Snyder and the Josh Harris Group that just merely awaits NFL approval.
One of the hosts of the Conduct Detrimental podcast, attorney Daniel Wallach, with us here on Grant and Danny. Where does $500 billion come from? And if it was a typo, where would $50 billion come from? I don't understand how we get to those figures.
$500 billion is a typographical error on the computerized docket sheet on PACER. PACER is the federal court database that reveals and shows all the court filings, and every new case has a sort of a PACER created summary of what the case is about. And some clerk inputted $500 billion when the number at issue was really $5 billion or $5.1 billion. It was a mistake. Nowhere in Davis's complaint or motion for a preliminary injunction does he request $500 billion. He's simply seeking the following relief, which is the return of his $5.1 billion bank draft, or in the alternative, to credit his Bank of America account for that full value. And on top of that, he's asking for any other damages that can be proven at trial. He is alleging that he's suffering reputational damage by virtue of this, failure by Bank of America to recognize and deposit these funds. But that reputational damage is not, $495 billion. It's just simply a scrivener's error. The demand here is $5.1 billion plus whatever reputational harm he suffered.
Gotcha. So I don't know how to ask this very well here, but I'm going to do my best. Does Brian Davis actually have this money? In other words, if he's acting as a proxy for somebody else, I think that could kind of be discovered. But is this something that he has earned through business? I mean, I've heard an interview of his. It was right here on our station where he basically had this circular logic that he claimed that he sold all this billions of dollars worth of intellectual property. And when pressed, he basically said, my business is the ability to generate business. There's another word for that. They built them in ancient Egypt. I kind of don't understand what control he has over this money, if any, or if he's simply a proxy. And kind of where does that all fit in? Make that make sense for me.
Well, Davis doesn't tell that part of the story. I think that's a critical missing piece in his lawsuit, where the money is from and who's behind it, because obviously he's not the original source of creating that, $5 billion of wealth. It comes from some deceased person's estate, from the Philippines. And, there's no narrative to explain how that money ended up in a banknote presented or issued to Brian Davis. Why would an administrator for an estate, presumably in the Philippines, transfer $5 billion to some unknown or some person in the United States without a written agreement memorializing the terms of the transaction? And he doesn't present any evidence of an agreement between Brian Davis, Urban Echo, and this trust belonging to Severino Garcia Santa Romana. It raises so many questions, and the National Football League will not want to deal with people who are fronts for other people. That's just bad business. There could be money laundering possibilities. I have no knowledge of that, but certainly a major banking institution subjected to federal and state banking laws and regulations has protocols, for how they, you know, investigate and review transactions going through their banking system. And I would imagine that Bank of America doesn't get a $5 billion bank draft from an individual's, like, you know, closely held company on a daily basis. So they went through their extensive review, and the reasons for their rejection of that banknote will probably be revealed in court papers in the coming days or weeks.
Our guest has been doing a lot of digging on what's going on with Brian Davis.
Oh, it's fun.
And this lawsuit.
This is so much fun.
It's quite an activity.
It's going to be so boring. It's going to be so boring in Washington, D.C. without Dan Snyder and all the drama that is created in his wake. I guess we'll have a stadium issue.
That's true.
To talk about in 2024, but nothing is as exciting and interesting as going down all these rabbit holes with Congress, stolen gold.
Well, I want to go down the stolen gold rabbit hole with you. So at Wallach Legal is where you can find him on Twitter. So, but before we let you go, you kind of got into this, but the wackiness that feels like some Nicolas Cage movie, as you mentioned, like, so what do we know about where this money came from? Tell us what you've found.
I searched for the name of the individual that was listed on the check. It's a very unique name. Severino Garcia Santa Romana, his administrator. He died a long time ago, but his administrator's name is God, I don't have it in front of me right now. Her last name is Rodriguez. Oh, yeah, it's Torresana Rodriguez. I mean, just look at some of the images that I screenshotted on Twitter. And if you connect those dots, that woman's name, Santa Romana, and that the fact that this is Citibank, which holds or supposedly is the account holder of the estate of Santa Romana, every avenue you go down when you research it on Google or any search engine that you prefer to use turns up this incredible, fantastic story about Yamashita's gold. And I lay out the sort of I try to summarize in a couple of bullet points where this money comes from. But apparently, you know, the Imperial Japanese Army during World War II had stolen gold. And they were burying it in caves and tunnels throughout the Philippines. And this guy by the name of Santa Romana learned about it, found out the location, and stole a significant amount of the gold. And with the help of President Ferdinand Marcos in the Philippines, when he was a young lawyer, supposedly set up all these different accounts. And many of the accounts are at Citibank. And I've tried to dismiss and discount this incredible story as a possibility, but there's nothing else out there on the internet relating to this person's name, estate, and the administrator. Every search reference goes back to something called Yamashita's gold, Yamshita's. He was a Japanese general during World War II, and supposedly this stash of gold was worth trillions. I mean, imagine if you were to combine the stories of It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, if you remember that early 1960s movie, along with Kelly's Heroes. This is a script worthy of the next Indiana Jones film.
Unbelievable. Daniel, this is really informative stuff, man. We could do this all day, man. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoy telling this story. It's not every day the world of the legal profession allows me to get into this kind of, you know, material that's more worthy of Netflix, you know, than the court system. So I take my small joys wherever I can find them. And this is clearly one of the most fun discoveries that I think I've made in, you know, 10 years, close to 10 years of providing sports legal and sports gambling legal analysis. It's definitely a highlight.
Well, we're looking forward to the movie. Be well. Thank you. We'll chat soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on again, Grant, and give my best to Danny. Have a great day.
Crazy. Good spot and a wacky story. G&D with you on the Fan. Roger Goodell has spoken about the Harris Group buying the Commanders. So is Jerry Jones. We've got that audio for you next right here on the Fan. Welcome back to Grant and Danny on The Fan, taking you up to 6:30 and Nationals baseball. Thanks much for making the show part of your day. Before we get out of here, we'll preview the Nats and the Padres, the return of Juan Soto, and the series that lies ahead. But Roger Goodell did speak today at the owners' meetings. Goodell asked a bunch of questions about the Commanders. Hold on, let me get this out.
You got it, buddy. There it is. Man.
It was a struggle.
There was an arm wrestling match going on. It was the movie Over the Top with Sly Stallone.
I felt like Nutty Professor, like Clump.
Yeah.
Sherman Clump.
When he's like, changing back.
Yeah. When like Buddy Love is trying to break out. I was like, yeah. I was like,
well, you see that high concentration effect.
I'm like, yeah. I wonder if people are noticing. Come on, we got this.
It's going to be a scream tonight at the Scream. Scream, scream.
The thing is, I got a weak throat anyway. Then Danny started eating some peanuts. I love peanuts. I said, hey, man, can I have some peanuts? He poured a bunch of peanuts
in my
hand. Yeah,
I gave you some peanuts.
And the peanuts have just wrecked me. Whatever progress I was making.
I don't know what it is about the peanut.
They moved the ball back 40 yards on my throat.
Peanut dust, or maybe it's the saltiness. I don't know. But, like, the tiny fragments always get me. And you were in such a vulnerable state. I should have denied you. I didn't think I had.
Should have denied me.
I should have said no.
Basically, the Commanders had a false start, a holding penalty, and then it was a 15-yard, like, taunting. And now it's first and 57. We were at the 11-yard line moving in toward the goal. See, what's happening?
I don't know.
I can't even use words.
It's a Stephon Heyer triple play.
This is unbelievable. But Roger Goodell spoke. Let's get to Roger Goodell. That'll help a little bit. So he was asked a bunch of things about the Commanders today at the owners' meetings.
Oh, baby, drink some water.
Goodell on a Commanders stadium there.
Yeah, listen, I've had the conversation with the mayor. I've had conversations with others in the Washington, D.C. region. As you probably know, I grew up in Washington, D.C., going over to RFK Stadium. So I understand the passion of the fans in Washington. I think that's something that the new ownership is going to have to address. It is not something we're requiring in the context of the transaction. But I know that the new ownership will be focused on it just from the limited conversations I've had with them.
Okay, we'll finish with Danny.
What about on if getting Commander Stadium into D.C. is a priority? That's Goodell, second from the bottom here. How about Goodell on the status of the Commander's sale process with Josh Harris? Let's see where that is.
Roger, what's your reaction to the Commander sale announcement, and what do you think the prospects are for getting that deal to a point where it can be approved?
I think we'll get it to a place where it'll be approved. The committee really just had their first in-person meeting yesterday on the matter. We really got the documents last week. So we're hard at work as a staff looking at that as we do every transaction. There's a lot of due diligence as well as compliance issues. All of that's happening and working full speed. We'll be in contact with the finance committee. And when they're prepared to make a recommendation, we'll alert the media as well as the membership, and we'll move ahead and have a meeting at the appropriate time. When the deal gets concluded by the purchaser and the owner, we get to work. We'll work as quickly as we can. We'll do the thorough job that we need to do in the committee, and we'll make a recommendation, and we'll prove it when it's ready.
That's happened.
Yeah.
I mean, the deal's concluded by the purchaser and the owner, so now the ball's in their court. On if changes will be made to team sale process and timeline for a Commander's sale.
Well, let me take it in reverse order. As far as ownership policy, that's a pretty consistent discussion amongst our finance committee and the broader membership. That's something we continually review and look at to see if there are modifications that we would make. I think it's important for the ownership to be engaged in that. But it's not the only thought process that going pointed to your question. It's not how we get greater value. It's how do we create stability in our league amongst the 32 teams. That's the most important aspect of our ownership policies. I think your first question was the timing. Listen, when the deal gets concluded by the purchaser and the owner, we get to work. We'll work as quickly as we can. We'll do the thorough job that we need to do in the committee, and we'll make a recommendation and we'll prove it when it's ready.
So basically talking about the procedures, right, which you and I both posited, hey, it's all well and good, and I know we're talking about ridiculous amounts of money here, but bear with us, in the circle of billionaires, this is all well and good when it's $1.5, $2 billion, a couple minority investors will scrape together a couple things, liquidate a couple bits of financing, yada, 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 I can come up with $500, $600, $800 million to get something done. We're triple that now, and it's only a small amount of time. We went from $2 billion to $6 billion. And so you've now made such a finite group that much more finite. Your regular run-of-the-mill billionaire that's got $1 billion simply can't do this without a huge influx of capital from a number of folks. You've now narrowed the list to basically if Elon Musk feels like it, Jeff Bezos feels like it, and like one more member of the Walton family. And I'm being a bit facetious, but it's still a tiny fraction of people. You're going to have to start bending some of these things, maybe changing some of the rules. I understand why they were in place previously, but you know the reality of the world is you may not be able to get to do this that much longer. I don't think they want to change. They'd rather be able to stick to their guns, but they may have to start, you know, fudging some numbers here or there to get this one through.
Shout out to Ryan, who got me some water.
There you go.
Attaboy. That's a winning move there by Ryan behind the scenes. Mary Jo White's report. We've gotten so many non-answers from Goodell over the last year and a half, almost, on this report. What do they have to say today? This is what he said.
The investigation regarding Dan Snyder that Mary Jo White is handling started last year, February. Does it get to a certain point where you're wondering why is it taking so long?
No, Mary Jo White is an expert. She's being incredibly thorough. When she's concluded the investigation, she'll let me know. We have pledged to make sure we tell our ownership, and we've pledged to make sure that the findings are made public. So we will do that.
I wonder if she's done with the report. She's given it to Goodell. He's waiting to drop it at his own leisure. It'd be funny if he's being asked, like, do you think it's crazy it's taking so long and it's just on his desk already?
Yeah, she's really thorough. She's the most thorough that's ever been. But and maybe it's done. I keep saying the same thing about this. I think there are, the final draft is going to be, you know, sort of it's sale dependent and kind of how this whole thing shakes out. If they want to do this out of sight, out of mind, they'll neuter it a little bit, dumb it down some so it won't have the teeth. It'll be kind of this in-between, middle-of-the-road sort of deal. Or if Dan bucks or resists, which I think is now kind of out the window, but you know it could have happened before he signed the documents, it might have been the full Monty just to you know to pressure him, et cetera. I now think this is going to end up being a big disappointment in a lot of ways, but the big picture for a lot of fans, and with all due respect to the, you know, the victims and folks that came forward that were actually involved in this, but for the most part, people have kind of gotten what they wanted here. So it's going to be, I think, a much to do about nothing when it finally does happen.
Goodell asked about possible retaliation for the Mary Jo White report.
You get two, Darren. Go ahead.
I appreciate that. There's also some concern from some of the former employees of the Washington Commanders if there's anything that could be in place or if there's any response from the NFL to protect them from any retaliation from Dan Snyder when this report comes out, even if he's the owner or not.
Yeah, as I say, we're in the midst of reviewing all the documents. A number of those issues will be discussed in the context of this, and we'll address that.
One thing I will say is, I think you heard what you wanted to hear from Goodell today. Mm-hmm. We played the one clip already. As it pertains to him saying this Harris deal is going to go through. Jerry Jones was very adamant as well in saying that Harris is a qualified buyer, which after Irsay casted a little doubt on the current structure of the deal. I thought that was really important because Jerry Jones throws a lot of weight around.
Yes, he does. It's Jerry's league, by the way.
He was very pro Josh Harris yesterday.
Jerry, do you have any concerns on the number of limited partners in the deal and just sort of the financing sources?
Not if it's structured. Yeah. If it's structured right, which it will be.
Yeah.
And it's too important to have the right structure for them coming in because they'll benefit from the way it's been structured for everybody else in the past that have come in. And so that structure is important. It's an important value of the franchise.
Are you looking forward to given
the values of teams now, do you think there's a world in which the NFL would allow institutional capital at some point to help purchase the team?
Well, I'm not so sure that I want to buy into the word institutional. I think that there, to me, I didn't get into the NFL for money. I had some and gave it all up, plus a lot that I didn't have, to be a part of the Cowboys. And so money wasn't the issue. And certainly no one had in mind that they could make money in the NFL or in sport.
So looking, I don't know why. Well, I guess I kind of do. They want to keep the boys club, right? Just kind of as it's always been. But at the same time, it's to your benefit if you allow more avenues for more money to come in for the value of your franchises. I don't think Jerry Jones is going anywhere. I think he's going to hand it over to Steven when it's time. But, you know, in general, as you're starting to climb up, we're going to be at $10 billion in the blink of an eye. We were at two just a couple of years ago. Now it's six. So you might need to alter some of those pathways to make sure that people can kind of meet those incredibly high hurdles.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Three Commanders didn't show up for OTA work today. Chase Young was one of them again. You're listening to G&D. That's next.
I was making money, baby. Got to make the money. So none of y'all would have ducked, you know, the money. Yeah, so you know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, it's a job. You feel me? Just like y'all do y'all job, I do my job. Y'all have a good one.
Thank you.
2 years ago, Chase Young was being asked about not showing up at OTAs and it hindering his performance when he was struggling as a sophomore. Fast forward to today, organized team activities in Ashburn, he wasn't there again. He was one of three players that did not show up, with left tackle Charles Leno and defensive end Montez Sweat. Charles Leno, the highest graded offensive lineman starting for the Commanders the last 2 years via PFF. Sweat, who has routinely led the team in sacks during his career, and Chase Young, who was the defensive rookie of the year in year one, had a really disappointing first 10 games of his second season, ended up tearing his ACL, missed 22 games after that, and came back for the final three games last season. I had someone that tweeted me today, at Grant H. Paulson, and he said, "Why don't you keep the same energy with Montez Sweat?" I was tweeting about the fact that Chase Young should be at practice. I have not mentioned that Sweat should be there or that Leno should be there. He's right. I have a different energy, to quote him, about Chase Young than I do those other two guys. Here's why. Charles Leno has proven to be a good football player here. Montez Sweat has proven to be a very solid defensive end here. So my answer to why is my energy different? Because Montez Sweat is coming off of yet another productive season, and he's proven himself to be reliable and a standout at his position. Chase Young is yet to do that. Young, in his rookie year, was good. Not exceptional, not great, not special or unique, but good. He had 7.5 sacks. He did a lot of good things. He was the defensive rookie of the year in a year where there wasn't a great rookie class defensively and no one with a whole lot of counting stats, which isn't to take away from him, just that as we looked at it over about a 10 or 12-year span, it was probably the only year, I think, with his numbers he would have won the defensive rookie of the year award. But the point is, he had a very solid rookie year, looked like he was on his way to being a terrific defensive end. 2 years of football later, two seasons since, it has been a major struggle, mostly because he missed a lot of game with a torn ACL, 22 of the last 34. But in the 12 he's played in, he's just been a guy. That is reason for me to think he should be at the facility. If you're not getting a good grade in the class, you deserve to put in some extra work. You should go try to get extra credit. You should go to your professor's office hours. He has been, at best, unproductive and at worst, like, very disappointing when he's been on the field since the start of the 2021 season. And we know that his coach has been annoyed at different points and has had issues with his maturity. I want to see the guy at practice. I'm not angry. I'm not mad. I'm not livid. Danny had a pretty epic rant earlier today. I'm sure you'll hear at some point, because it was, for my money, an all-timer. But I don't have that energy of anger or, like, disgust over this. I'm just a little bit miffed and disappointed that it seems like this guy, after 2 years of not delivering and living up to the hype, has not changed his ways to try to do something different, realizing that his previous attempts didn't get him where he needed to go.
Yeah, I mean, I do have that venom and anger and irritation about it. And to the person who says, you know, what about the same energy for Montez Sweat? I'm the extremist on this. I think everyone should be there. This is a very unique deal, right? You have limited opportunities on the grass, limited opportunities of time with your teammates. This is not like a normal job where, you know, hey, we got some office camaraderie. There's a voluntary bowling event after office hours, and we're going to do a happy hour. It ain't the same thing, man. You're bleeding next to these guys. You're breaking bones next to these guys. Being in it and being part of a team, look at the Miami Heat. Look at some of these teams that come together and they all genuinely like each other and pull for each other, and somehow they overachieve. It's not some random coincidence. This team building thing is absolutely instrumental. If you want to be a leader, you fancy yourself one of the guys that's in charge of this thing, this is where the work is done. It's not on Instagram. It's not some pregame speech where everyone's rolling their eyes because you're over-talking and not producing. This is the leadership time, right there when you don't have to be there. I know it's voluntary. Volunteer. I need you to want to be there. That's the kind of player I want leading my enterprise. They've already told you what they think about him by not picking up his option. That should tell you everything, that what you've done to this point hasn't worked. It's glaring, and it's right there in front of you.
Yeah, the coaching staff, not Danny Rouillet or myself, the coaching staff and the front office responsible for him becoming a really good player elected not to pick up this player's fifth-year option that they drafted second overall, which is really without much precedent. They decided, they chose that Chase Young was going to be a free agent at the end of this year. They've watched how he operates behind the scenes, the work he puts in, the commitment level, the leadership, the skill, the talent. And they were asked by the league, by way of the way this works this year, hey, do you want to sign up for one more year of Chase Young or not? And they said, not. They are not going to do that. So don't be mad at me. They're the ones that are opting out of this player moving forward as of right now. It's a show-me season for him. You go ball out, you get paid. You get tagged, or you get a long-term contract, and you're here for good. And I hope that happens. I hope he has 17 sacks, wins the Defensive Player of the Year award, cuts a promo about how everyone should leave him alone, and he never has to come to another OTA again, as far as I'm concerned, if he does that. But because he's never done that yet, because he hasn't shown that ability or close to that ability, because he's been more James Smith Williams than Von Miller, it's pretty important that you, in my opinion, show this organization that you are doing everything in your power, that you're controlling the controllables. And you don't care about this organization anymore because you think you're out or they've moved on from you. Show other organizations. Maybe don't even worry about showing anybody anything. Maybe just put yourself in position to have the most success this season by showing up, working, putting the best foot forward. He couldn't improve on his game last year, learn a new pass rush move, you know, develop, add anything because he was rehabbing. So this offseason is so critical for him, and this is how it's starting. What do you guys make of his decision not to show up for OTAs? 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Danny. Do you think this is a red flag moving forward, symbolic of kind of what he has been and done here, or do you think it's not a big deal? And come several months and a lot of sacks from now, we'll look back on this and everyone will be able to laugh at anyone who thought it was a thing that he wasn't at OTAs. We're Grant and Danny on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.